to the Daily Gold Podcast. Covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roybern.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. With us today, returning guest, he is David Skirica, publisher of Stock Chart of the Day. And you may remember, I think we had Dave on a couple months ago, middle to the end of February, and he was predicting a spring breakout in gold when few people, myself included, were predicting or anticipating that. So Dave, it's great to have you on. Kudos to you for that call. Let's talk about the micro issues first. So we're speaking on a day when gold and silver are getting hit. Does this worry you? Is this a retest of the breakout? I mean, what do you make of the recent price action today in gold and silver?
Well, the ironic thing about you, me saying that I thought we could have a breakout, I was looking more later in the spring, like April, May, but it happened earlier. And then the price went higher than I even thought. I was looking around 2,300 as my breakout point. And then about, maybe that 2,150, the old resistance level, or 2,200 being the support. So we went about $100 higher than I thought. Right now we're about 2,300. We could still pull back to 2,200 or 2,250, but I think that this is just a regular pullback in, that off that breakout. And we were seeing sentiment. Like, I had a couple guys I haven't heard from in years being like, writing me like, yeah, man, the market's finally good now. And it literally was that day that gold had the big reversal on that Friday. And I was just like, you guys keep away from me. These are like junior mining guys. I'm like, you guys called the short-term top, basically. Yeah. Right. So anyhow, like, yeah, I sort of think that that we see that breakout, and then we saw in that breakout, now we're gonna kind of be in this consolidation mode. And I think one issue that we've had, and I kind of did a 180 on this. First of all, when I was looking for Fed rate cuts last year, I was looking for 3 to 4. I thought the market was way aggressive when at some point in December it got it to like 6, And then, that came down to that. But now, like, inflation is remaining stubbornly high. Even the last, GDP report, which was a poor report, the one thing that was high or stronger than expected in that report, so thing that the Fed doesn't want, was inflation, right? The calculator in that report. So I think until something really breaks, like stock market falls 20%, or unemployment starts going higher, or housing really cracks again, it's tough for me to see for them to really wanting to cut interest rates. And the issue we have now is, this is kind of the moment I've been waiting for 30 years, or probably Goldbug's been waiting for 30 years since I started, was the debt now is so high that at some point they're just going to have to start monetization and like QE infinity, because there's just going to be too much debt rolled over and issued all the time. And that, I think, is the best scenario for gold. But what has to launch that real QE? Okay, they'll probably stop shrinking the balance sheet this summer. But I think what has to launch it is, again, some kind of break in the markets. And then, then there'll be even more debt issued, because, in a recession, tax revenues go down, spending goes up even more. So then they'll have to monetize that. And I think that is the perfect scenario for gold and silver. So just to quickly reiterate something that we talked about off air, for those of you who were 2008 and the gold shares tanking with the rest of the market, what you have to understand is from 2002 to 2003 to 2007, 2008, the gold shares rallied with the market and were actually one of the hottest sectors. This was pre-crypto. So people, like the way they trade in these altcoins now, were trading in junior mining stocks like that, right? Because they were the kind of speculative, whatever you want to say, play on a asset class, right? So then that all dumped. And then, because of that. But if you go look at even like COVID in 2020, when there was that really intense selling for a few weeks, the gold shares and gold tank, but it came back right away. Like, they were trading at the pre-COVID highs, like within a few weeks. So I would think if there was some kind of capitulation or hardcore selling in the stock market, that it would just last a few weeks and then gold would come right back. And when they start that loosening cycle, I would think that gold and precious metals would really lead the way out of it. So, and I do think that is going to happen. The economy is finally showing signs of weakening. Consumer confidence came out today, again, the day we're talking, pretty weak. So I just think the high interest rates, people having too much debt, I think that's starting to like catch up now. And all that free money people got over COVID is kind of dried up now. You know, it's, they're not getting those stimulus checks and that sort of thing anymore. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. And like I said, I think we're just in a consolidation. But like, what I think will be interesting is when bad news becomes bad news, we could be more like in the 01, 02 scenario or 72, 74, where, you know, gold and precious metals go higher while the stock market and other asset classes go lower. And I think that's where you're going to see the breakaway too, where people are going to realize that, like, I'm not here to Bitcoin bash, because I've actually said Bitcoin's fine risk on asset, but we're going to see Bitcoin is going to trade with the NASDAQ and all of these, you know, risk on assets, and gold's going to trade opposite to that, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, talking about the history, 2000, 2001, 2002, and then also the early 70s. How do you think, like, just in terms of macro, how do you think it's going to play out? Like, do you think we could have stagflation, or are we going to, or is the stagflation period going to be so short because, you know, the economy, like, the weaker the economy gets, like, you know, ultimately that's going to exert some downward pressure on the CPI and inflation, and then they have to cut. So I guess, I mean, I don't know, it's a real nuanced question. Like, you know, how long do you see the stagflation period lasting before you get into a recession? Because, I mean, you know, some people I've talked to, they just think it's going to be recession, you know, maybe not stagflation. Other people think, yeah, we could be in stagflation for a few years.
I think there would be, like, even if, say, we're at first, we have stagflation, which causes the bust will probably, so you can understand one thing, difference between the 70s and now is the 70s wasn't so dependent on these asset price bubbles, right? It's like the economy just, there was still money flowing around in the economy, and places like Florida, you know, with the boom after the war, and some places boomed even with higher interest rates, in terms of like real estate booms and the whatnot. So, but because we weren't dependent just on the stock market going up. Now we're so dependent on this wealth effect, be it like millennials or Gen Zers owning crypto, being it like baby boomers or larger asset managers owning the Magnificent Seven, that I think when these asset markets tank, it is short-term disinflationary or deflationary. I remember walking around Atlantis, you know, I live in the Bahamas, as a lot of people know, and I lived in Nassau still at that time. This is 2008 in November. And I had literally never seen that November is usually when things start to pick up, you know, because weather gets colder, people start to travel down south. And I never seen that resort that empty. And it was because the crash had just happened in October. And, you know, like upper middle class rich people lost a lot of money, canceled that Bahamas vacation or didn't make it, right? So, and if you go look at 2008, 2009, there was a period of deflation or disinflation or whatever you want to call it for a few months or 6 months or something. So I don't think we'll get the negative CPI like we did then, but I could definitely see it. Maybe that actually gets it down to that, back to that 2% level, because you're going to see a short-term period of where demand dries up in the economy. But they're going to be so aggressively, then you're going to see inflation start to rise. You know, because look what happened in 01, 02. Now, granted, 2021, 2022. Like, granted, a lot of that had to do with COVID and restrictions, and there were, you know, supply chain problems. But a lot of it had to do with how aggressively the response was, with the amount of money printed, with rates going to zero. And I think one thing that proved was the United States and Western Europe will not have a Japan 30-year deflationary cycle, that when they do reinflate, we will have stagflation in the West. We won't. Japan is a very unique situation where it's a large exporter, and they own all their own debt domestically. So I think that was a unique situation, you know, where they didn't really have inflation for 30 years despite their debt ballooning. And watch for Japan too, because that's another thing. As long as the U.S. keeps this tight policy, one thing that could, you know, start a crisis is if that yen completely collapses and we're at 34-year lows, you know. So, anyhow, but to get back to that other point, yeah, I could see short-term disinflation, deflation after, and then followed by, I think we would see the next inflationary move. And my question is the move that we just saw similar to like the first little spike in inflation in like 68? Or was it more like the 1971, which was a little higher? And then or was it like 74? And we only have one more spike coming. So the question you have to ask ourselves is, are there two more spikes coming or just one? I think one issue that right now that makes it worse is back then government debt to GDP was, you know, 40%. Now it's 120% in the US anyhow, and in a lot of these other Western countries. So the amount of money that has to be printed to monetize and you know, is going to be a lot more this time around.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, I know you've done this, but if you look at the numbers and you look at the math, I mean, it's really unavoidable at this point that we're basically going to have to monetize the debt like Japan has been doing. And yeah. I mean, is that the catalyst that takes gold to, you know, 3,000, 4,000 over the next few years?
Well, again, if you look at that, those stats were like, you know, if you look at gold, let's look at gold in yen terms, right? The yen like peaked
It's killing it.
Yeah. Yen peaked 10 years ago, you know, with whatever, 80 yen, 75 yen to the dollar. It's gone down 50%, you know? And, you know, that means in yen terms, gold is, you know, gone up like, you know, gone from 1,100 to 2,300 in the US, it's gone up 4x in Japan, right? So from the bottom. So yeah, I think that's the way you have to look at it, that, and Japan is obviously not the reserve currency. So is that, yeah, they really have to monetize it. See, when you monetize it, you can have higher rates of debt. Because for example, now the Fed still owns 20% of the US debt. So really that 120% is like 100%, because the rest of that debt, the interest just gets paid back to the Treasury. The Fed, you know, collects the interest payment and then sends it back to the Treasury. So I think the idea is, if we're going to head to 200 or 250% or something crazy like Japan, we have to own about half this debt. Like, that's what the Fed's going to say, because then that's the only way sustainable, because at least those interest payments will be funneled back to the government, and the government can remain relative or somewhat solvent, right? So, because otherwise, you know, what's going to happen is essentially Japan is going to, the U.S. is going to see like an unsustainable amount of interest on the debt. Because again, one advantage Japan has too, you know, whatever, they're still under 1% on the 10-year bond. That's not going to happen in the U.S. We're probably remain at least in this, whatever, 3-6% range at least, you know. So they're going to have to monetize. And I think that's when gold and silver really go higher. And I think there's another factor in it, just market-wise. Like I said, if I'm right and Bitcoin and these other risk assets smash with the market, remember, right now, one reason we're not seeing a trickle-down effect really into the juniors, you know, and even like gold stocks have firmed up recently, but they're not, you know, they're not blowing the world away, right? It's just, I think the part of the reason is there's all these other assets people still want to invest in. Well, all of a sudden, if you get a big bust in the market, and like 01, 02, or 72, 74, gold stocks are rising, right? And everything else has been taken out and shot. Then it's basically like you're going to see gold really like the money funnel into that sector. And then there's another interesting, I think, thing for the juniors, is that there's been this talk in Canada that and Frank Giustra and Pierre Lassonde talked about it. And when they're saying they want the government to invest in gold, they don't want the government to write a check and, you know, direct. What they want to do is these government pension plans in Canada, teachers pension plan in Ontario or whatever, federal pension plans. They just want them to put a couple percent of their money in the mining sector, because it's such a big sector for the Canadian economy. And that could really trigger another move into the sector. That would happen more like late 2025, 2026, because that's after the Canadian election. Because I think Poilievre, who's probably going to become the new Canadian prime minister, would, you know, he's going to be a lot more pro-mining than Trudeau. So that could also help the sector. But yeah, long story short is, yeah, I think they're just, this is it, man. This is like I said, this is kind of the end game, where they just push these debts up. And I did an article on it. I write for something called Financial Intelligence Report, which is through Newsmax.com. And it's like kind of a financial publication they put up. And I just said, like, I used the jump the shark term. I said, and both in terms of the amount of money they printed and the amount of debt they put out during COVID, the monetary and federal authorities jumped the shark monetarily and fiscally in the last recession and in the COVID crisis. You know, they went too far, basically, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Several things to touch on there. First, that's really interesting about the pension funds investing in the mining sector. I mean, you know what's going to happen. It's like once they see higher prices, once they see a chart going like that, then they'll invest probably at the wrong time. But they can't be, you know, those funds, they can't be contrarians. You know, they have to follow, they're herd investors.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, it's still significant. But that aside, I think it's really interesting. So, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we basically have these dual drivers of gold. You know, number one, you know, we have the fiscal situation, how they're going to have to print, you know, they're going to have to monetize the debt at some point in the next year or two. And then on top of that, if you get a cyclical bear market, you know, in a real recession, like, I mean, those two pillars, that to me is what could make gold go vertical in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. You know, I couldn't agree more. I think, and like, again, one thing we haven't seen is what happens when the superpower of the world essentially is almost a consolvent at the fiscal level. Like, you know, what happened to the UK in the 40s, gold was still on the gold standard at $35 an ounce, right? And of course, because the pound tanked, in pound terms, gold went higher, but in the US took over as a reserve currency. So we've never seen what happens when a country's still the reserve currency. And, you know, they're basically, you know, because they weren't, the US government wasn't insolvent, but they had to delink from the gold standard in the 60s and 70s, but they weren't essentially insolvent. I would argue they almost are now. So what happens under that kind of macro scenario? Now, you can't base your whole life on that, because I've been thinking that was going to happen. I guess when I started in the markets 25 years ago, and I was a young guy in my early 20s, I thought it was going to happen, you know. And then it just
you think it's going to happen in like 3 years?
Yeah, now you're thinking now it might happen in 3 to 10 years. So, you know, like I thought that in 2000, but like it didn't, right? Because they kept doing QE. You know, they kept having the flight to quality into the U.S. bond. And another interesting factor is the estimates are, like, you know, the second half of this year into next year, between 12 and 17 trillion of debt either has to be rolled over and combined and rolled over and new issued, because most of the debt is issued as 1-2 year debt. And firstly, a lot of that debt was issued at like 1%. So now it's going to be issued at like 5%. Yeah. So right there, boom, let's just do the math. If it's 17 trillion, you're paying what, 200 billion on that in interest a year? At 5%, you're paying almost 900. So right away, boom, you're going up 700 billion a year on the deficit just by increased interest. And then who the hell is going to buy this stuff? So again, that also comes back to monetization, you know, that will happen. And by the way, all the estimates are showing, like, they'll probably run a fiscal deficit about 4 to 5% of GDP this year, right? You know, or five, you know, they're saying that next year it's going to be closer to like 7% of GDP, 7-8%. So, and remember, these are estimates still when we're in economic expansion. So, you know, that deficit is probably going to be north of 10% of GDP if there's a recession.
Yeah, you know, while you were talking and you mentioned bonds, that popped in my head as the third pillar. Do you have any idea, like, how much, the new secular bear market in bonds, how much that's helping in gold? I mean, either quantitatively or just what's your qualitative analysis of that? Like, do you think that helped, along with other factors, that helped gold break out recently? Because, you know, the stock market kept going up.
Yeah, I think because we have to look at it this way. I know a lot of people think, oh, you know, people had that, and I knew this would disconnect at some point. So I never bought into, like, oh, if interest rates go higher, you know, it's bad for gold. Because we're, especially in this cycle right now, where we're coming off the secular top in bonds.
I'm sorry to stop you for a second, but we're in a new regime now. I'm going to make you answer another question. Can you talk about how, because I'm guessing what you're going to say, and so I'm not letting you talk. I'm giving another follow-up before I even let you talk.
Okay.
Like, can you explain how we're in a new regime now with this relationship with bonds and how people are so slow to understand this? I think it gets into a little bit what you were talking about, or what you were about to talk about, before I rudely cut you off.
Yeah, I think that, like, people have always seen that, like, oh, when rates go higher, maybe gold goes lower, and, you know, these low rates make, you know, the opportunity cost of holding gold makes gold kind of cheaper to own. So people want to own it. So when rates go higher, people are like, oh, I get a more real return. And they tend to think that the type of investors that say are bond and gold could be similar, conservative people that maybe just want, you know, return of capital, right? Rather than return on capital, make that 5 to 7% a year or something like that. And, but I think the issue is a lot of people were investing in bonds, number one, as a risk, I don't want to say risk on, but it was an asset class you can make gains in. Like you look at the TLT and it goes from 100 in 2018 to 160 at the top during COVID in 2020. That's a 60% return, right? So people are speculating on that on top of just trying to get their, you know, 3, 4, 5% a year in a bond. And then the issue is though, when a bond goes down, you know, then you're losing money. So, you know, there's that whole 60-40 thing where you have 60% of your money in stocks, 40% in bonds. And I think what with bonds going down in price, what happens is like the TLT, that 160, it's now trading at 90. So if you bought it at the top and you were getting 1% a year, you know, you're down 40%. You lost 40 years of interest return, you know? So I think when people see those losses on bonds, they'll just be like, well, if I really want to get into a conservative investment, you know, rather than, you know, not be in equities, I think I'm going to look towards gold. Because gold is at its all-time highs and it's breaking out and bonds are way off. Also, then you have that opposite, you know, trade like the 70s, where if you're in an inflationary cycle, rather a disinflationary cycle, like we were basically, you could argue from the early 80s, it's early 2020s, you know, these higher rates won't look as good too, because inflation will be going higher, right? So, you know, like right now, bonds have a real return, you know, the 10-year your bond is 460 and they're saying inflation is around 350, right? But if, you know, even at the top of this last move of bonds, inflation was 8% and the 10-year was 4 to 5%. So it was negative return, which is positive for gold. And like I said, when those rates have to go higher because of higher inflation, too much debt, the bond price will go down. So I think this whole 60-40 thing, that's really been a creation during this huge bull market in both bonds and stocks, which has gone on since the early 80s. And now that bonds are obviously in a longer term bear market, you're going to see, I think, a lot of that 40% that was supposed to go to bonds go into precious metals, because people are going to see that as the conservative party, or at the very least go like, okay, maybe I want to be 50, 25, 25, like 50% stocks, 25% bonds, 25% gold, something like that. And I'm talking like real money management, you know, conservative pension funds, endowments.
Right, yeah.
I'm not talking about the crypto guys.
Not Joe Jerkoff, yeah. Who's just been trading crypto, you know, for the last couple of years. That's a really good point. And by the way, I'll send you this chart, because I've created a 60-40 and I had a guy calculate total returns for me going back, and gold divided by that 60-40 is really close to making a confirmed new secular bull market signal. The other two were in beginning of 72, beginning of 2002. So, I mean, that tells me we're still early in that, you know, the transition away from the, like you're saying, the 60-40 model, you know, to actually putting gold in there. But no, that's a really good point about, and those people who are kind of been following that model, that's real money. Like that's actually real money that institutions, pension funds are managing.
Well, like I remember Harry Brown back in the 70s, yes, when he was a really big writer, he had like the five asset classes. And he said, you should put a fifth of your money in gold, a fifth of your money in bonds, a fifth of your money in stocks, a fifth of your money in the Swiss franc, because at that time, the Swiss franc was the most stable currency in the world. And it was going up, you know, against, I think it was a fifth of your money. And there was one other asset class that's actually slipping my mind, right? So that's kind of what he said at the time, right? And then if you look back, that kind of asset allocation, because, you know, that's obviously a lot more diversification than 60-40, because you're going to five asset classes, not just four, right? It was like that kind of asset class diversification was like, you know, always getting between 6 to 8% a year on historically, you know, if you looked at over 40, 50, 60 years. So, and again, that's what like these big funds were. We're talking endowments and like I said, pension funds that have hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars. That's what they want. They're not looking for, you know, come rocket coin, you know, to go up 1,000 times or something. Like they're looking for conservative returns, on money. And I think that's where gold now fits in, because like, you know, I think you're going to see like I could even see places like the UK or Canada who foolishly sold all their gold at the bottom. I could see them, their central bank starting to buy some, you know, because you look at Canada, for example. Canada has $300 billion in U.S. treasuries, you know? They're one of the, I think they're the fifth or sixth largest holder. Like, if I were them, I would take $100 billion out of that. And even if you're buying gold at $2,500, you know, I would put $100 billion of that into gold, right? So, you know, I think you'll see some of that too. It won't just be, you know, for years we've heard China, Russia, these kind of central banks are kind of hedging against the U.S. dollar too. We've heard about them buying, but I think you're going to see more of these central banks get back in, especially like, why again would they want to buy a U.S. treasury at 4 or 5% that's going to be dropping in price on the coupon, and where gold, we say, may going up 10 or 20% a year or more.
Yeah. Okay. Just I guess a couple, you know, shorter questions on gold. Okay, this cyclical bull market, you know, we're not talking about the secular. I'm sure we agree we're in a new secular bull market for precious metals, but this particular cycle, this current cyclical bull market, how long do you think it could last?
Well, look, we've all been waiting for another 2000s period. I'm a little older than you, and I started a little earlier than you. And, you know, I took for granted at the time, the 2000s, I guess like the actual low was December 2000 for the gold shares. It was April 2001 for gold itself. And, you know, that lasted really till, you know, 2011. So it lasted 10 years. Really, the 2008 crash was kind of a V blip, and it came right back. And so, you know, you could say 7 years if you use 2008, you could say 10 years. And then all these other moves we've had since then, like the 2016 rally, I think it was like 9 months, you know, 2018 to, you know, to really 2021, because the COVID thing again was a blip, at least, was the longest one. It was like 3 years. So we've had really 4 years of an up cycle going back to 2011, you know, in 14 years. That's why many of us have become manic depressives in the gold and precious metal industry, right? You know, I'm sure it hasn't been good for my health or my liver, you know? So I would think that we're finally entering another one of those 5 to 10 year cycles. Now, for me, as a speculator in the gold juniors, you know, which we both do, right? I think I'm going to be out after like 4 years or something, because now is the easy money to be made in the juniors. And I don't want to really be around when it gets frothy, because probably, hopefully by then I've made enough money. I don't need the last 3 or 4 years of froth, or I'll be very more lightly invested. Yeah. But yeah, I really think this can be a 5 to 10 year move, just because all these factors we're talking about, the monetary problems. Remember, the monetary problems are going to get worse because the baby boomers are all retiring. You know, they're all, and what are you going to do? Are you going to tell them, oh, you can't get your, you know, your Social Security or your Medicaid or Medicare? Or are you going to just like monetize the debt to still be able to pay for those things? Like, you're probably, the politicians are going to do the latter. So I think you go look at it, it does really set up for like a 10 year kind of cycle here, like a 5 to 10 year cycle, like 2001 or like, you know, you could actually argue the 60s was almost a 20-year cycle, because the gold equities bottomed in 1962.
Right. Yeah. I talk about that a lot. Okay. Another question. Okay. Do you think this bull market will be more like the 2000s or the 1970s, or like a combination?
I think it's going to be a combination, because we're going to have higher inflation. I also think too, like I did, it's actually one of my best viewed videos on my Stock Chart of the Day YouTube page. I did a video saying the only investment you need to buy, and it wasn't gold and precious metals. It was India. Cause I think India is going to outgrow most of the global economy for the next, you know, 20 or 30 years. They have the right demographics. You know, they're on a per capita basis, they're much poorer than China, so they have to catch up to China. They're now outgrowing China. They're doing like 6 to 7% a year, where China's doing now 4.5 to 5%. So, and you know, I say though, the Indian market's overstretched right now, and wait for, so what I'm trying to say with that is, I think after any, whatever potential correction, bear market in stocks, I think the next move that will go back to like the 2000s is where I'm talking about. The 2070s was a bit like this with Japan and other emerging markets. I think we'll have a combination of inflation and the emerging markets are going to outperform, like they did from 2001 to 2008. You know, so I think it's a combination of the 70s and that. And like I said, the caveat or the other factor we don't know is what happens essentially when, again, the world's reserve currency countries essentially could potentially have a debt, you know, or inflation crisis. We don't know because like the U.S. just it kind of smoothly took over from the U.K., you know, after the late 40s. And then the U.K. was basically, you know, they had been there, you know, really since the Civil War, been the world superpower. So we don't know what that looks like in the modern era because it's never kind of really happened, you know? So like, how does that look, you know? But definitely if you think there's going to be a BRIC currency or something like that, that kind of also says, okay, you know, and in the BRICS, let's face it, Brazil, Russia, are commodities. Hell, China, even though they consume a lot of commodities, China is almost a commodity producer. They're one of the largest gold producers and copper producers in the world, you know? So like all of those countries other than India are really, you know, commodity producers as well. So I would think that, again, it's a kind of the mix of the 70s and 2000s, but you have to throw this caveat in of the debt problems because we've never seen in the modern age, a modern financial age, a world reserve currency with this much debt. And remember, even back when the UK kind of went bankrupt after World War II, it was really just the government that was broke, right? Like individuals in the UK, there was no credit cards. There was no real, you know, there was no mortgage debt. It was like, you know, as we know, the UK is kind of famous for Charles Dickens books and the debt prisons and, and stuff like that. So like, you know, there was really no personal debt. And that's all around the world. Like, Canada is even worse than the U.S. when it comes to that. So, again, a mixture of the 70s and 2000s in terms of inflation, emerging markets outperforming. But then we have to throw this whole debt caveat in it, which is why, look, I'll finish off on this note. They're going to lie about inflation. We all know that. Like, even now, we know 3.5% is probably double that, right? And when it was up to 8, it was probably 15. But, if it does get to 15, we all know it's really 30 or 40. Like, that's – and – they might have to get it to those levels to basically monetize and inflate the debt away.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. Well, Dave, on that note, tell our listeners how they can follow your work, where they can go, and all of that.
Well, my website is still addictedtoprofits.net. I'm hoping that by the end of May, I move it over to Stock Chart of the Day. And then YouTube is just YouTube at Scott Day. So S-C-O-T Day. So then that's the channel if you want to follow me there. And I have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/StockChartOfTheDay to buy kind of my member service. I am going to start a Substack. I'm doing something really unique now, which I'll just quickly talk about. Just take me a minute. I have this little portfolio of $20,000. Like it's not a pretend portfolio because I actually have my money in these things, but it's a pretend portfolio in that the entire portfolio is as few of these investments that I have. So it's a mixture of doing private placements, pre-IPOs, option trading, trading small caps. And I'm trying to see how I can, what I can turn this 20,000 into, just to show that maybe someone who doesn't have a huge amount of money can make money trading these little either small cap stocks, options, slash, like I said, private placements that I do. So I just started that last week. So, and that's part of Stock Chart of the Day. And if you write me an email, just davidskreek@gmail.com, you'll see that I have a lifetime membership, which is kind of gives all these things away at a discount. So, yeah. So the easiest way to start is probably just my YouTube channel. So it's youtube.com/@ScottDay. Yeah, that's the easiest way.
All righty, Dave. Thanks so much for coming on. I and my listeners really appreciate it. I love your knowledge of history, your historical perspective, and how you follow all these different markets. And I think we'll have to do this again over the coming months. We'll see if gold is, you know, done with the correction and moving higher, and then we'll get your thoughts again at that point.
Yeah, I think the last thing, again, I keep saying last thing, but I think what really has to happen is people have to get stopped assessing with, the Fed's not going to cut rates. And once they realize, at least rates aren't going to go higher too, I think that also helps gold as well.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.